Golf Smarter number 245, recorded on August 24, 2010.
SmarterPodcasts.com. Delivering sound advice.
What's your ball's flight path? With the Golf Better coach, Rick Kosher.
This is Golf Smarter. Sharing tips and insights from golfers and golf professionals to help lower your score. It's worked for your host, Fred Green.
Welcome and thanks for downloading the Golf Smarter podcast. This episode is brought to you by Audible.com, the internet's leading provider of audiobooks, with more than 75,000 downloadable titles across all types of literature, and that includes fiction, nonfiction, and periodicals. For a free audiobook of your choice, go to audiblepodcast.com/golfsmarter. Our guest today is Rick Kosher, who calls himself the Golf Better Coach. Rick's question to every golfer that he works with is, what is your ball's flight plan? He contends that everything that happens in a normal round all comes down to that fraction of a moment when the club face comes in contact with the ball. That was enough for me. Welcome to the Golf Smarter podcast, Rick.
Thank you, Fred. Wonderful to be here today.
Thank you. It's so nice to have you on the show because you are the Golf Better Coach. At Golf Better, thegolfbettercoach.com. It's not part of the Golf Better podcast. We want everyone to know that, but you can go to golfbetterpodcast.com and still end up at golfsmarter.com.
You know, Fred, there's a reason for that.
And tell me.
We're all trying to learn to golf better.
We are all trying to learn golf better. And you have an interesting method of teaching and an approach that is all about ball flight, not necessarily your swing, correct?
You know, that's correct. And one of the reasons I kind of developed this was I try to change people's paradigm on what they're really thinking about instead of trying to make that perfect swing. So it kind of led me down a path that that I talk about a lot in my introductory lessons about the flight plan of your golf ball.
I find that very interesting because in watching professional golf, we see these guys, we talk about their physicality, we talk about the amount of work they put into it, and we talk about all these different elements on the mechanics of their swing, and yet they still hit bad shots.
Well, you know, Fred, here's my perspective, and I usually get a lot of confrontation on this comment. People look at me very starry-eyed and go, are you crazy? One of the things I always tell individuals is, do you realize that every golf ball you've ever hit or that you will ever hit is a perfectly flighted golf ball?
Are you crazy? How was that?
Okay,
I
got another one.
Was that good? Did I fall?
Yeah,
right,
absolutely. Yeah, exactly. Or they're trying to gasp for breath, trying to figure out, okay, I'm paying this guy for this. And here's where I'm coming from. Based upon the laws of physics that are applied during that 1/2000th of a second relationship that the face of your club has with the back of that ball, you are programming, based on the laws of physics, where that ball is going to go. And it will go there exactly the same way if you apply the laws of physics exactly the same way every time. Go ahead and argue with me.
No, I wanted you to keep going. What are you talking about?
What am I talking about?
No, there are multiple ball flights, and it's really determined. Really, it's amazing because of all the mechanics that you do, of all the things you do in your swing and your setup and your standing behind the ball, getting up to the ball, your position, grip, alignment, all those things. What really matters is that fraction of a moment, not even fraction of a second, but fraction of a moment that the club makes contact with the ball.
Exactly. And as that ball flies, it is showing you what occurred at that 1/2000th of a second.
It's all dictated in 1/2000th of a second?
That is the best literature I've found. Someone else came up to me and said, no, you're not correct. It's half a 1/1000th of a second. I said, okay.
Isn't that 1/2000th of a second?
That's what I thought, but hey, they were going to argue with me. So what happens, though, is many people know what these are. You have 9 traditional ball flight laws, okay? And they're achieved by 3 different things that occur. Either your golf ball is going to start in a direction, let's say, and let's just use three directions to begin with. It's going to start left, or it's going to start straight, or it's going to start to the right. Okay? So that's one of the two factors that will determine where the ball is going to go. Mm-hmm. The other thing that will happen to a golf ball is it will curve sometimes left or right, which has no bearing as to whether it starts left, straight, or right. I'll give you an example. You hit a perfectly straight shot that fades to the right for a right-handed golfer. Now, there's a shot that most people would accept all the time.
Sure.
But if you take that same ball flight pattern and start the ball to the right, then what do you have?
A slice,
right? But the ball flight pattern was identical to the one that you hit straight. It's just that you started it in the wrong direction.
Right.
So many people will go, well, I'm coming over the top, or I'm doing this, or I'm doing that. And I usually look at them and I go, wait a minute, let's hold on a second. Let's look at where the ball starts as your first opportunity to understand what happened. It results in one very simple occurrence, and that is, which direction was your swing path? If the ball goes straight and remains straight, then the face of the club remains square to the swing path. Where'd you aim the bow? It's that simple. Mm-hmm. So often, people will look at it and go, well, I must be making a swing fault, when in reality, their perception of straight is off a little. You're hitting a great golf shot. You just didn't aim it where you wanted it to go. You aimed it somewhere else. So the laws of physics cause it to go where the face is aimed every single time.
Sure.
Now, the other two things that occur is, what relationship is the face of the club to that swing path? That's one of the things that will cause the ball to fly and curve. Now, a ball curves for one really, really simple reason. The axis of rotation of that ball gets tilted. And I'll give you an example. You've got a pizza cutter at home, right?
Sure.
You know, the kind with the handle and the round circle on the end that you use to cut?
Absolutely.
Okay, so do this for me next time you're at home. Take it out in the garage and take off the cutter mechanism. Take a golf ball and drill a hole through the center of it. And put a screw through the center of that golf ball and attach the end of the screw to the pizza cutter.
My wife.
Got the visual?
Yeah, but my wife's going to kill me.
Okay, well, just tell you, threw it away
can
by
I just,
accident.
Yeah, exactly.
So if you hold that pizza cutter so that screw that's going through the center of that ball is parallel to the ground, and you pull the ball backwards from the top and create a backspin,
okay,
you'll notice that that ball is rotating perfectly perpendicular to the ground.
Backwards, right?
Mm-hmm, backwards. For most people, that's the way you want to hit the shot. So in that rotation that's perfectly level with the ground, that ball is going to fly perfectly straight in whichever direction the path of the club was facing when it made contact.
So even the slightest deviation of that is going to make the ball spin in a direction other than straight ahead?
Correct, because these are the other two characteristics that come into play. One I mentioned was the relationship of the face to being square or not square. And I'll tell you what you do. Take a golf ball and put it on your dining room table, mm-hmm, or maybe your bench out in the garage so you don't get in trouble, and place an iron behind it. Take a 5-iron and just place it behind the ball and show yourself a relationship of where that face is perfectly behind the golf ball, okay? And then raise the handle of the golf club so that you lift the heel of the club off the ground. Okay? And even if you're keeping the face square, you'll notice that the face angle on the golf club changes its angle of relationship to the golf ball.
Sure.
And when that contact occurs,
and I hope that everyone who's listening right now, that you are doing this with your hand, just kind of visualizing this with me.
That's how I'm doing it right now when I'm explaining.
Yeah, exactly. I am too. I mean, you're doing a great job. So thank you.
Listen to the visual.
Yeah.
So when you tilt the axis back to the pizza cutter, okay?
Mm-hmm.
You're holding it straight out in front of you, and you've got that nail or screw that goes through the center parallel to the ground. And then tilt the pizza cutter so that that screw is now at an angle, and spin the ball. And you'll notice that it spins on the same axis, but you'll notice that because the axis is tilted, the rotation is not perpendicular. The rotation is being directly influenced by the amount of tilt to the axis. So if you want to hit a draw, tilt the axis of the golf ball. And there's many reasons that that happens. But not the same thing that everybody else thinks it is. Often, and I'll give you a perfect example of this. 2 weeks ago, they were doing an interview on television before Ryan Palmer played his fourth round at the World Golf Championships at Firestone. And the commentator asked him, they said, listen, you won earlier in the year, and you evaporated, and all of a sudden you've learned now to hit a ball straight again and score. He goes, what happened? He goes, I will tell you what happened. My golf club manufacturer gave me a new set of golf clubs. And I didn't realize until last week that the lie angles on that club were not consistent with the lie angles I had on my previous set.
Whoa.
And the commentator, knowing enough about what that might mean, says, so are you telling me what? He goes, well, they were a degree and a half off, and they were a degree and a half too flat. And the commentator said, well, then, he said, then you must have been hitting everything to the right, or your ball was moving to the right. And if you go back to my tabletop discussion and you lift the heel of the golf club and let the toe remain on the tabletop, you are flattening out the lie angle of that club, and you are changing the relationship of the face of that club to the ball, and you will cause it to go to the right. So what Palmer discovered was, and the commentator goes, well, but you weren't hitting everything to the right. He goes, no. He said, what I did was I had to change the position of my hands during my swing in order to accommodate the deficiency in the lie angle of the club. Well, Nick Faldo gets on after that comment and goes, I cannot believe for the life of me that a professional golfer would not know that his lie angles on his golf club were incorrect.
Ooh.
And I said to myself, so what do you think the average golfer has a problem with? So often
buying clubs off the rack is part of the problem.
You can get lucky. Well, you can get lucky.
Yeah.
Okay. But, you know, I'll give you a for instance because we're on the topic, okay, because it matters. I had a gentleman come out with a brand new set of golf clubs. He'd just taken them out of the box in his trunk. I said, do me a favor. I said, I'll do you a favor. I said, I'll check your golf clubs to be sure that these clubs are what you ordered. He goes, looks at me like, what? Okay. So I pull out a 6-iron, and I check it for loft and lie. Now, the loft angle was 28 degrees, which by most standards is probably 4 degrees too strong. But let's not discuss that for a minute. I measure his 7-iron. It, too, is 28 degrees.
Oh.
Okay. So I said, you have two clubs here that theoretically the only difference between the two of them is that one's a half inch longer than the other in shaft.
And at the bottom of the club, one says 6 and the other one says 7.
So then I said, well, I'm going to show you one other thing on this. So I tested the lie angles. Now, Ryan Palmer was complaining that his golf manufacturer, and we don't need to mention names, but it's a major club manufacturer, major advertiser on television, said that a degree and a half was making a significant difference in his ability to make cuts. This gentleman's two clubs were 5 degrees off. And I looked at him. I said, sir, I said, listen, I understand you told me you got fitted. I said, don't blame this on the guy that fit your clubs. He wasn't the one that pulled the box off the shelf and mailed it to you. I said, even though you were fitted, I can guarantee you that some stock picker pulled that set of clubs that was already in the box off the shelf and sent it to you. I said, but here's the real issue. I said, based upon my analysis here, the 7-iron belongs to that guy down on the end of the golf course. The 6-iron belongs to the guy that just got out of his car in the parking lot. And you still don't have a club in your bag that's going to fit your swing. So when we get back to the impact of that face angle, often you tilt the axis of a ball based upon two reasons. One, you close or you open the face of the club with relationship to the swing path so that your face is no longer square, it's opened or closed. But another factor that plays a key role is lie angle. If lie angle is incorrect, this is like trying to hit. When you hit a side hill lie with a ball above your feet, Fred, which way does that ball tend to go?
Left.
Okay. If you hit a ball, Fred, that's below your feet, which way does that ball tend to go?
Right.
Okay. So this gentleman that I was looking at had a club that one would hit it lefter and one would hit it righter off of a level lie because his lie angles were, in fact, that different. So go ahead and try to teach somebody how to play golf with clubs that are that incorrect. I won't teach somebody how to play golf unless I know and I do an equipment evaluation on their clubs. And if I find that their clubs are so incorrect, then I teach them how to play golf off of a golf club that I put together out of my Henry Griffiths fitting cart. That's what they get to use when they practice with me.
Wow. Awesome. Hey, I need to break for just a moment here.
Sure.
Because this episode is brought to you by Audible.com, the internet's leading provider of audiobooks with more than 75,000 downloadable titles across all types of literature, featuring audio versions of many New York Times bestsellers. For Golf Smarter listeners who do not already have an Audible account, to entice you to try out their service, Audible is offering a free audiobook of your choice. Now, it's a great time to be reading. Anytime's a great time to be reading, but if you've had a summer vacation and you didn't take a book with you, maybe you should have taken an audiobook with you. Now, Rick, what about you? Are you an audiobook listener on vacation?
Fred, I am. I love listening to books, especially when I'm traveling in the car.
Yeah, great time.
Do you have a moment? I got a funny story.
Please. Is it about an audiobook? Because Audible would love for you to tell a funny story.
I am a huge Vince Flynn reader.
Okay.
Anyone who's not familiar with him, he writes a CIA operative series of books. And I don't like reading the books during the year because I try to save the audios for when I travel from the Chicago market back to Scottsdale for the winter and back in the spring.
Okay.
So I love listening to his books on tape because they last about 13 hours.
Uh-huh.
So I almost get to listen to two of them on the way out. I'm traveling down through Oklahoma one time, and I am so involved in listening to this book, concentrating on my driving, of course, that I forget that maybe some attention should be paid to the gas tank. And I look down, and my heart just stops. And I'm thinking, where am I? And when will I come across the next gas station? Because I was so involved in the book. The readings are just sensational.
Well, I'm just looking through. There's 16 different Vince Flynn books right here at Audible.com. Most of them are about 6 hours, but the last couple have been long, 11 to 12 hours, 17 hours, 11 hours, 12 hours. And there's a lot to choose from. The most recent being Pursuit of Honor, the Mitch Rapp series.
Yeah, Mitch is my fan. I'm a big fan of Mitch.
Is that right? Well,
oh, absolutely.
Awesome. Well, any Golf Smarter listener who's into this kind of content, if you don't want to do a golf book, it's okay. We don't mind. We're always looking for different kind of content. And so check out Pursuit of Honor, the Mitch Rapp series. It's unabridged by Vince Flynn, and it's narrated by George Goodall. Looks like George does all of the audiobooks for the Vince Flynn series. And how do you like him as a reader?
You know what? It's sensational because he changes his inflection and changes the dynamics. He doesn't actually he reads very well, and you know when the characters are changing. Really, really good. Really, really good.
Awesome. Well, there you go. That's a great recommendation, The Pursuit of Honor, the Mitch Rapp series by Vince Flynn. Check it out at audible.com. And for a free audiobook of your choice, if you don't want to do that, please just go to audiblepodcast.com/golfsmarter. That's Audible, A-U-D-I-B-L-E, audiblepodcast.com/golfsmarter, and sign up today for your free audiobook of your choice. All right, let's get back to work here. And interestingly enough, Rick, I got an email just today from Don Kressel of Logan, Utah. Mm-hmm. And I hope he doesn't mind me sharing this email out loud because, it'll become obvious why. But I think it's appropriate to our conversation. He says, "My son-in-law taught me how to play golf. Right now, he's struggling with his game. On his drives, the trajectory of his ball is a low hook with a lot of spin that only goes about 50 yards. Then about every fifth hole, he hits a high slice that goes out of bounds. Since he taught me how to golf, I know I should keep my mouth shut. Good boy, Don. However, I hate to see him struggle. Could you please provide some insight on what's going on and how he can fix his drives?" And he says, "If you talk about it on the podcast, then I can say, hey, this is what I heard on the Golf Smarter podcast, and the advice is coming from a great source and not from his father-in-law."
You know, I really like that question. A lot of it has to do with what we've talked about thus far, but I'm going to jump to something that might help this person a lot. Again, it's physics. Now, here's what I want to say. Most golf people, including guys who are on the tour, I won't mention one in particular, are trying to hit drivers that have not enough loft on the face.
Which one? Come on. Who cares?
Well, Phil has a problem trying to hit a 6.5-degree
driver. That's generic enough. Phil.
Okay. When Phil hits a 6.5-degree driver, if you look on the PGA statistics and you go under the driving statistics, you'll find that Phil launches his driver at approximately 11.77 degrees. Approximately.
Okay. Approximately.
I think I got that correct.
Okay.
The stat is on the site. Here's what I'm talking about. Average touring pro, one-third of them have a swing speed greater than 150 miles an hour. The rest of them are between 110 and 115. So we're going to pick on the guy that swings 115 miles an hour. Phil swings at 118, by the way. Okay. Long ball drive champions are in the 180 mile an hour range.
Oh, my gosh.
Okay. That's not a swing you can bring to the golf course very effectively.
And most of us are struggling to be around 100, correct?
Right. But I'm going to pick on 115 for a minute because I want to draw this scenario, and then we can go to the 100, okay?
Good.
So we can have a comparison.
Thank you.
At 150 miles an hour swing speed, the ball will go 176 miles an hour. That's because the USGA regulates the coefficient of restitution or the spring effect of your driver and the manufacturing of a golf ball. That's what they say it has to do. Okay? So at 176 mile an hour ball flight, you need to launch that ball at 10.5 degrees, meaning its relationship to the ground needs to be launched at a 10.5 degree angle, needs to spin at 3,195 RPMs, and it will carry exactly 270 yards. Change any of those variables, and the ball doesn't go as far. Period. It's physics. So let's go to this gentleman. Let's assume that this gentleman has a swing speed of 90 miles an hour. Okay? I swing at 108 and hit the ball fairly consistent, which is pretty good.
Yeah.
100 is typically somebody in the 10 to 15 range handicap-wise.
Okay.
And this is just generic. I'm just throwing these out just to kind of categorize.
Put us in a place. Yeah.
Just to give some kind of equivalency. Mm-hmm. Okay, so let's talk about 90. A 90 mile an hour club head speed, and I test people off of my ball launch monitors for this. The ball speed is going to be 130 miles an hour based upon USGA specifications. The optimum launch angle, Fred, is 14 degrees. Ball spin rate, 3484. Carry distance, 202. So let me paint this visual for you. Your wife had you plant a new tree in the backyard. You get it put in the ground. Now you got to go water it. You go and you pull the hose out and you turn the water on and you can't get close enough to the tree to water it. So you turn the water pressure up all the way and you open up the hose to make that really fine, tight flow. And you hold the hose up in the air and you think you have it at the optimum launch angle and the water is still not getting to the tree. So in your infinite wisdom, you figure if I raise the launch angle of my hose, then the water will go farther. And what happens? The water doesn't go farther. It goes higher, but it doesn't go farther. So you're still not watering the tree. So let's lower the hose. Great. The water goes lower, but it doesn't go farther. So there's an optimum angle that you can hold your hands at in order to get that water to go as far as physics will allow it. Still not watering the tree. What do you have to do? You go to your wife, you say, "Hon, we got to move the tree." The same physics apply when you try to hit a driver. What this gentleman's problem, what I would first do with this gentleman is I would create a different relationship with the face of his driver and a shaft that would work more in unison with his swing speed. Okay, I've got 4,500 combinations in my golf, in my fitting system to help determine that. Not 4,500 for a driver, but I've got a lot for a driver. So what we're trying to do is match his swing speed to a face angle of a golf club that allows this ball to leave on a proper trajectory, okay? Now, here's the problem. Equipment does affect motion. You will learn how to hit that driver eventually, but you will not use the same swing as you do for your 7-iron. And if you watch Phil Mickelson hit his drivers, you'll see that as he goes and tries to hit that driver, that he tilts his spine angle away from the direction of flight, which will increase the loft of that club. But when you tilt backwards, if you don't do it absolutely perfect, you distort the square face relationship to swing path, and you create an open or closed angle, or you create a flatter or more upright lie. And anytime you do that, you tilt the axis of the golf ball, and it goes where physics demands, not where you wanted it to. So by trying to swing a club that's not physically made for you, you are trying to now change things. So often I'll see people out on the driving range teeing it up 4 inches high, hitting it 6 inches in front of their foot, and leaning back all the way. Phil doesn't use that swing when he hits his 7-iron. He does not use that same swing. He changes his swing in order to try to make the driver do what he wants it to do. And that's exactly what we all do. Now, we have other problems. Ryan Palmer, all of his clubs, I'm going to assume, had a lie incorrectness of a degree and a half. But the gentleman's clubs that I measured were 5 degrees difference between two clubs. I didn't bother to measure the rest of his set. So we're trying to figure out how to play this game. And not only are we trying to make a different swing with our driver, we're trying to make a different swing with our 5-iron, our 6-iron, and our 7-iron because none of them fit us.
Well, it's something that comes to mind in what you're saying to me is for the golfer that, let's say, ranges from a 13 to a 25 handicap, okay? And I would probably think that that's most golfers out there. All right. The majority of golfers probably fall in that range. Would you agree with that?
I would agree that the majority of the golfers who play on a consistent basis do fall into that range. Okay. And I'm talking a person that's playing
the people
three
who
to five
the,
rounds a month.
Okay, and they love the game. They don't have a lot of time to practice, but they would love to improve, but they just would rather go out and play when they have that free time to go out and play. I think that's a lot of us. I know that there are listeners who are totally dedicated to the game, that they are single-digit handicap players, that read absolutely everything. They wouldn't be searching out a podcast and listening to a podcast. But in those players who are hitting, let's just say they're hitting in the 90s, what are the odds that their face angle in their 90 shots on a round of golf is going to be, how many times is it going to be the same through that round? I mean, isn't
well,
it going
to
be different every single time?
And this is something on my website. I have something under my game improvement page, which is a scorecard. And people are free to go to that website and download it and print it off on paper. And what I ask
he won't say, but this. I will. It's www.thegolfbettercoach.com. Now, I say www and never do, but you need it this time. So check out www.thegolfbettercoach.com. Go ahead.
Sure. What I ask people to do with this card is go ahead and chart their golf round. And it's very simple. And I'll just play the driver off the first tee, okay? You hit your ball. What I ask for you to do on the scorecard is record approximately how far it went and where it ended up. You either missed it left, you hit the fairway, or you missed it right, okay? Now, let's get to the second hole. You use the driver again. And now this time, you miss it right. And you go through your entire round of golf, and at the end of the day, you go home and you're sitting there telling your wife that, you know, you hit the ball really well today, but I didn't score very well. You can look at the card and you can go, well, let me look and see what I was doing with my driver. I've got a driver that I'm all over the place with. That's a big red flag. But let's say that driver was very consistently hitting balls left. But my 3-wood was very consistently hitting balls to the right. Then the wife looks at him and goes, well, hon, I got the solution for you. Use your driver swing with your 3-wood and your 3-wood swing with your driver, and the ball will end up in the center of the fairway. And he sits there for a second, scratches his head, and goes, you know, that's a really great idea, hon. Wait a minute. So that's what we're trying to do. So, but back to the question, if we can determine what our consistencies are, and I do this with all my students, as we're working on their game, you need to tell me where you're consistently hitting the ball, because now I can begin to prescribe for you some medicine. Mm. Now, it may have a lot to do with the club you're hitting, but at least we understand that you're always hitting your driver left and you're always hitting your 3-wood right. It really shouldn't be much of a difference in those two swings to begin with.
Mm. Interesting. Now, where on your website can we find this chart?
I have a page called the Game Improvement Tools.
Right. Okay. I'll click on that.
And on that page, there's a bunch of little links.
And one of them, the Game Improvement Scorecard?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
It's a PDF file.
Great.
It has instructions on the bottom.
Oh, I'm excited. I want to play.
When you print this off, and this is how I make my cards, right? I take the PDF file and I email it over to my favorite printing company, and I ask for them to please print these double-sided on a cardstock, okay, and cut them in half for me.
Yeah.
And when you do that, every piece of paper that you have them print gives you 4 scorecards.
Nice. Oh, I
because
like
you can
this.
Two on one side and two on the other side. Cut them in half, and you got 4.
Oh, this is great. Everyone, you got to go check this out.
And when you're using it, I don't need to
this is awesome.
Going down the left-hand side are the holes 1 through 18.
When you play
a par 3, just circle the hole number.
Yeah.
The third hole's a par 3, circle it. So now you know that was a par 3. And then when you get down to a par 5, maybe X the number out. And everything that's not circled or X is a par 4. So if you're concerned with whether or not you're shooting par or not. But what I ask people to do with this card, Fred, is really important, is just take the time to record the information. Don't do any analysis work on the course. When you get home, it's really fun to go back through that card. I'll give you another example on that card. I have something on that card that is called the Scoring Club. What I ask people to do is, it's really important for us to understand how many putts we're hitting, but I ask people to identify what their scoring clubs are in their bag. Meaning, which is the club in your bag that you feel very consistently you should be hitting the green with in regulation?
Absolutely.
Now, for some of us, it could be our five irons and on up. For many of us, it might be our nine irons through our wedges.
Right.
And for others, it just may be a couple of wedges. All I ask is for you to count any stroke that you make with that as a scoring shot. So now at the end of the day, you have number of putts per round, and then you have number of scoring shots that you hit. And if you add the two of them together and divide by the total number of shots you've hit, you'll find that you end up with somewhere around 65, maybe even 70% of your overall game being consumed by all of your scoring shots,
and
meaning
you
your putts.
And then you can start figuring out where you need your help.
Well, you know, why go on the driving range and chase the most understood definition of insanity, and that is keep repeating the same motion over and over and expecting different results.
Absolutely.
So at least when you begin to use this card, you'll begin to chart where am I not scoring and where can I begin to change my practice routine so that I can become a better putter. One of the things on the card is how far away from the hole was your first putt. If you are always outside of 10 feet or 20 feet, then you have two choices. Learn to hit balls closer to the hole with your scoring club, or learn to make more 25-foot putts so that you can have two per green.
Or swallow your ego and just take out another club. If you're coming up that
Well, that's just it. That's what I'm saying. So you have to know that you're hitting the wrong club.
Right.
But you don't realize that until you begin to realize that, man, most of my first putts are from outside 10 or 15 or 20 feet.
Awesome.
I can't make two putts consistently from there.
I've been looking for something, a scorecard like this to carry with me, and I didn't want to create one. I am so excited about printing this out and bringing it with me to the course. Listen, we've won way over our time because we're having just too much fun. Too much fun. I'm hoping that we can have you come back again at some point.
Absolutely.
Rick.
I'd love to.
Oh, that would be great. Thank you so much again. It's Rick Kosher, and his website is www.thegolfbettercoach.com. Rick, thanks so much for answering the question from Don. And we need to get more into, I guess, in the next time, the 9 flight paths.
Sure, absolutely. Love to talk about it.
Because we really didn't even talk about what is your golf ball's flight plan, and that was the main goal. So we'll do this again real soon, maybe even next week.
Love to. Wonderful. Thank you, Fred.
And thank you, Rick. Since he and I recorded this conversation, Rick has updated his game improvement scorecard, which I'll be using on my round this week. I've included the link to this free scorecard on the blog at golfsmarter.com and in the show notes that are attached to your episode, whether you're listening on your iPod or your Android phone, whatever. Check the show notes and you'll find the link and you can go right to it. And if you're doing it on your computer, probably best to go to your computer, go to golfsmarter.com, go to the blog, click on a link, go right to the page, and I'll put a specific page that'll just download the scorecard right there, and you can print it out. Take it with you to the golf course. That's what I'm going to do. How would you like to win the Mo Norman Advanced Training Kit, valued at nearly $400? Hopefully you heard our interview with Todd Graves in episode number 243 and know all about the single plane swing as introduced by Mo Norman. Well, this kit includes Todd's ebook, a video of your choice from their library of DVDs, the alignment tool, a strike bag, and the Feeling of Greatness training club. Deadline for entry is Friday, September 3, 2010. Just go to golfsmarter.com and click on Enter Contest. Now, for Golf Smarter members, you are automatically entered to win, but can increase your chances by entering again, because if you do, your name will be entered twice. But Donald Corby of Aurora, Colorado, slow down. because you are a Golf Smarter member, you have been selected at random to win our extra drawing of the Mo Norman Feeling of Greatness Training Club. Don, just need to know if you're a right or left-handed, and we'll send it out to you. Congratulations, and thanks again for joining Golf Smarter for members only. We close today with six words that describes your passion for golf. We have a discussion on our Facebook group, or you can send me an email, where you can submit your six words. And this one is submitted by Mike Persky, whose six words are, to recharge my batteries with friends. Next up, Rick will return to discuss in detail the various flight paths, how to recognize yours, and improve it. If you have any questions, comments, or suggestions, click on the Hey Fred button, and don't miss a single episode. Join Golf Smarter for members only right now at golfsmarter.com.
Smarterpodcasts.com. Delivering sound advice.